From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield, this is Inside Eagle Nation, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.
Strike three called, it is well with my soul at J.I. Clement Stadium.
Your all-access look into Eagle Athletics is Inside Eagle Nation.
Toogie with one, a three, and a win it! Got it! Game over!
Let's go to the Learfield studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
Welcome back into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. As a busy week this past week in Georgia Southern Athletics, and boy oh boy, it gets even more busy as Georgia Southern baseball starts off this weekend.
Yeah, compared to last weekend, this one is the actual busy week. You're going to be in Louisiana. You'll get a chance to see the post-Tony Robichaux era begin for the Raging Cajuns out of Tigmore Field. I'll be here with basketball/baseball/basketball/baseball. Hopefully you'll get back at some point for the final game against Ball State, but that's all to be talked about over the next little bit.
Yeah, as of now, I may not be there at first pitch for Sunday at Ball State, but I'll be there at some point.
So that means you're going to walk in as somebody hits a walk-off home run, just like you did last year at Auburn.
Hopefully it's not a walk-off, yeah, because that means our plans got pushed back a little bit, but we're okay. We're
supposed to get back to Savannah
about 11:30.
Okay.
So, carry the one, and I should be getting here about the second or third inning.
Well, heck, you could just pull in, just walked out of the dugout.
Yeah, I'll probably have my IFB already in. Just turn it on, we'll be good. But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A lot of Eagle action in Statesboro this past weekend, especially on Saturday. I think you had five or six events going on, whether it be rifle, softball, basketball, tennis.
And I think that William and Christy from Southern Exchange found a way to get to every single one of them.
I'm convinced, because this past weekend, I made a concerted effort to try to get to as many of those as possible, and every time I would walk in, they'd beat me there. I'm like, I just saw you 10 minutes ago. How did you beat me here?
You figured out time travel somehow, and I want to talk to you more about that.
Exactly.
Is that the store? Which part of the store is that?
Yeah, which part is your time machine? Is that that little back room? Is that what that is?
That's why they're making
right, there it is. We start off with Georgia Southern men's golf. As we talked about last week, the Georgia Southern individual collegiate finished up on Monday as Jake Maples got the victory with a 4-under par shots. As Colin Bowles, also with fifth, with 1-under. Men's golf will head down to Gainesville on Saturday and Sunday for the Gator Invitational. Men's tennis sweeps the doubleheader on Saturday, had to work around the weather. The afternoon affair was pushed back a little bit because of torrential downpour here in Statesboro, which I don't know if you saw it, but it was to the point that you had rain hitting the roof of Hanner so loud that it was louder than the crowd. We were under tornado watches and warnings.
Yeah, while we were in Louisiana, we had seen a couple of tornado watches or warnings in the area, and I think it was right before we were about to take off, so that we must have just missed this at some point during the midweek, and then getting towards the weekend, we heard about it a little bit more, but yeah, a little unsettling.
Yeah, it got a little sideways pretty quick, but Ben Stennis got the victory in both games of the doubleheader, 4-1 against Kennesaw State in the morning, and then the sweep of 7-0 against USC Upstate in the afternoon. They will be home at the Wallace Tennis Center on Wednesday against the Mercer Bears. And then it's back down to Florida for Georgia Southern men's tennis on Saturday. In the morning, they'll be in Daytona for Bethune-Cookman. And they make the trip over to the land for Saturday afternoon against the Stetson Hatters. Women's tennis pushed their doubleheader over 2 days because of the weather. Saturday and Sunday got the victory on Saturday against Kennesaw State 4-3. And then a sweep of USC Upstate 7-0 on Sunday for Georgia Southern women's tennis. They will be home on Sunday for a single match this week against the College of Charleston just outside Hanner at the Wallace Tennis Center. Georgia Southern Rifle hosted the Georgia Collegiate Championship presented by the Georgia Army National Guard over at the Shooting Sports Education Center. They took on number 20 North Georgia. They fell to the Nighthawks and will have a couple of weeks off until February the 23rd when they head to Charleston to take on the Citadel. Georgia Southern Track and Field was off this past week and heads to Birmingham on Friday for the Sanford Invite number 2. And Georgia Southern Softball got things going with the Bash in the Burrow. And
they sure did.
You're not joking. Because of the weather again, the first game that was supposed to be the first of two on Friday for Georgia Southern Softball was against East Tennessee State. It got canceled. They did get the second game in against Hartford. Got the run roll victory 10-2 over Hartford. East Tennessee State and Rutgers were the opponents on Saturday. Got the victory in both of those 9-3 against East Tennessee State. And then 9-1 in five innings, a run roll over a Rutgers team that was picked relatively highly in the Big Ten. And then on Sunday against Army, fell to the Black Knights 7-5 on Sunday. But it was a game that Georgia Southern Softball started every game, I think, the way that you want to if you're head coach Kim Dean. They scored multiple runs in the bottom of the first inning of every game. They had five runs in the first two games of the first inning.
I was seeing some of the highlights on social media, and the home run that Shayla Smith hit, the three-run home run against Hartford, I don't know exactly where it landed, but I'm going to guess it went pretty far.
Yeah, yeah. And then you had the new lights, the LED lights, making their debut at Eagle Field. After home runs, you had the twinkle effect. Pretty sweet.
Is that cool? Did it mess you up at all?
A little bit.
Okay.
I wasn't sure what was happening the first time.
Like, I'll call Nick. Oh, geez. What's going on? Hold on.
Maggie, help. Georgia Southern Softball will be at home Wednesday against Mercer before they head down to the Citrus Classic at the Disney Wide World of Sports down in Orlando as they take on St. Joseph's, Lehigh, Bethune-Cookman, and Charleston Southern this weekend. Georgia Southern basketball was back in action as women's hoops was at home against the Little Rock Trojans on Thursday, fell 65-49. As Little Rock jumped out in the first quarter 21-7, Eagles would cut it to single digits multiple times in the second half, but a big fourth quarter propelled Little Rock to a 65-49 victory. And then Arkansas State came into Hanerfield House on Saturday after falling to Georgia State on Thursday. This is a heck of a weekend for Georgia State women's basketball. They knocked off both of the Arkansas schools, a upset of Little Rock on Saturday. But
got them going.
I guess.
You got them going now.
I guess. But Arkansas State fell to Georgia Southern as the Eagles pick up the 80-67 victory and packed the house in pink night on Saturday. Eagles donned the pink jerseys. In a cool sentiment by Georgia Southern women's basketball, we talked with head coach Anita Howard earlier on last week's edition of Inside Georgia Southern Basketball over at Eagle Creek about the honorary coach, somebody from around campus that has their hand on the program, gets to sit on the bench, be a part of the coaching staff for the day, gets to come over and talk to us after the game on post-game radio. But Becky Wolf was the honorary coach on Saturday. The name may sound familiar, and it should, as her husband, Dr. Wolf, a professor on campus, but also the PA announcer for Georgia Southern women's basketball. But Miss Becky was a breast cancer survivor, is now the cancer in remission, and she was on the bench, and she was as fired up as anybody on that bench for Georgia Southern women's basketball on Saturday. Is again 80-67 the victory for women's hoops. They led by 10 at halftime, and then a 23-11 mark in the third quarter, had an 18-4 run for Georgia Southern. Jaden Hamilton had a three to make it a 26-point game. Arkansas State would cut it to 8 a couple of times in the second half, but Georgia Southern able to hold off the Red Wolves as Jaden Hamilton had a career-high 25 points, 9 rebounds, 5 offensive boards, and 7 threes made by Jaden Hamilton, was one shy of a single-game school record. Georgia Southern men's basketball was down in the Boot State this past week. Every time we go to Louisiana, I've got to say Boot State. Ever since I've heard Jay Walker say it, I've got to say it.
Well, it sounds better than Pelican State. I know they call the basketball team the Pelicans, but
yeah,
Boot State just sounds more, just sounds easier.
Yeah, they should be the New Orleans Boots.
Well, if you're a Falcons fan, that's what's happened in the playoffs the last few years. I'm sure they would love that.
Yeah, baby. Men's basketball taking on ULM on Thursday. Got the win 67-65, and it was a game that I think was a little bit different than Georgia Southern men's basketball had thought going down. They were down by one at half, but built a 17-point lead in the second half, and then ULM storms back, and you have a last-second shot that just missed going in that would have won the game for ULM. But nonetheless, a road win is a road win, and you got a milkshake.
Oh, yeah. The thing that happened the last time we were on the road, everybody's supposed to get a milkshake if you win a road game. And there was one that they didn't get, and it was mine.
Oh.
And it got spilled.
Oh.
I was looking around thinking, okay, where's my sugar? I'm looking around, and Keith Chesley, the director of operations, walked up and said, yeah, they spilled it. Like, oh, okay, well, at least I went to a good home. I don't know. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. Just like, where are we going?
Where are we going next?
The ULM game, though, I'm sitting there thinking at different times, how is Georgia Southern not crushing this team? And other times, how is Georgia Southern crushing this team? It was just a strange game from the word go. Got down by 9. Michael Ertl was unstoppable pretty much from the beginning. He had 30 points in the game. But thankfully, Quan Jackson made big shots when he did. Thankfully, Ike Smith was as locked in as early as he was. And for about 7 minutes there early in the second half, it was turnover after turnover after turnover they were forcing. And that's a lot of times what we see in non-conference play when the Eagles are forcing close to 20 a game. You know, you mix in some of the non-D1s, but when you get teams that don't see Georgia Southern and how that press works and how active they are in the half court, they force more turnovers. It felt kind of like that, and then they built a 17-point lead and thought, okay, they're going to run away with this. But then Michael Ertl started banging threes. The Eagles had a good number of decent looks from three themselves, just couldn't hit them consistently. But Quan hit back-to-back shots to stretch out a 6-point lead. He had 16 points in a row during the second half. And Ertl, I think, had 18 out of 22, so it was pretty much those two. There were 8 other guys on the court, and there were coaches trying to move all those guys. It really didn't matter. 13 was scoring for Georgia Southern. 2 was scoring for ULM. And then at the end of the game, after the missed free throw on the 1-1, Josh Nicholas put one up from half court, which would have won the game. I swore I thought the ball was going in. I talked to Nick White. He swore the ball was going in. Everybody on our side of the floor thought the ball was going in.
Man, that would have been a heck of a call by Nick White. I guarantee you he'd been fired up in the fan.
Did you see the video of it?
No.
Backboard, around the rim, out, which would have won the game and ended their losing streak.
Oh, honey.
And we're just looking around. Okay. That's a win.
Let's go to Lafayette.
Let's get packed up. Let's get the milkshakes. Let's go. Taken care of. But it turned out it was an important win, because if that would have gone in or the Eagles wouldn't have won, I can't say what would have happened at the Cajun Dome. And it could have been a much different standings that we're talking about right now. But getting that win gave the Eagles a lot, as we're going to talk about here going into the Cajun Dome against UL.
You headed down to Lafayette, Louisiana on Saturday. 86-79, the victory for Georgia Southern men's basketball. 6 minutes into the game, Bob Marlin said, see ya, and headed out to the Cajun Cooking Club.
Still don't understand exactly what happened.
Yeah, I was in the studio, and I was watching the game, and I didn't see anything that egregious, but Bob Marlin goes John Calipari, and the strength coach pretty much has to tote him out.
There had been a call or two earlier on that I think that he wasn't too thrilled about. But that happens more so with him than any other coach in the league, now that Ron Hunter's gone.
Yeah, but how mad can you get in 6 minutes?
But the odd thing was, when he got the first technical, nothing was called. They were in the half court, but John Heatley, the second of the three officials, teed him up. Bob starts to go after him, and John Heatley is coming over to try to signal what had happened. He is looking dead at me, because we're benchside at the Cajun Dome, and as he's trying to give his technical signal, Bob keeps going on and on, and John's just, instead of going technical with the hands, he's just kind of put the other hand up, like, Bob, Bob, Bob. Finally gets the technical called, just keeps going on and on and on. Now, granted, as Jay Walker pointed out, Marlin was not on the court when he got the first technical foul, but he must have said a magic word. That's all I can, because it was on the other end of the floor. Our crowd mics aren't going to go all the way down there. Maybe it showed up on Jay's. Maybe you could hear it a little bit if the E plus was cranked up. But then I looked down the other end, and another official of the three, it was Hunter Allen, he called the second technical, and then he went ballistic. I've seen coaches flip before. John Brady flipping here my first year in 2015 with Arkansas State was a different kind of funny. But this one was, what exactly happened that he just went this crazy over? And it was 6 minutes into the game. Like you said, what could you possibly,
like how mad can you get 6 minutes into the game?
Well, calls are going to get missed. Things aren't going to go your way. Of course, we know that. That's going to happen in every single game that you're a part of. But it's almost like it was premeditated to a degree.
The best part of the entire thing is I was sitting here watching it on ESPN+. You had Bob Marlin going absolutely ballistic. And right behind him, you had Jay Walker, who's kind of kicked back in his seat, had his arm around one of the SIDs down in Louisiana, Josh Bruner. And Josh is just sitting there watching, kind of like a kid watching his dad work for the first time. And Jay is just kind of kicked back just watching it happen.
At that point, if you're Jay, what are you going to say? I mean, I'm thinking, God, this coach has been thrown out 6 minutes in. I'm looking at our bench. Everybody's just standing up, kind of leaning over. Mark Janak, who was sitting right by me, our great sports info director, because bench side, it's like we have at a couple other places and up in Atlanta as well. He is right next to the bench. I'm one seat over from him. And we're just trying to wonder, okay, that was odd, but why? And then as he gets further and further up the tunnel, as you mentioned, his strength coach is pretty much gorilla pressing him and trying to throw him out of the arena. Then he leaves and we're like, okay, let's get to it.
Here we go.
Then we won the game. Then we won the game.
Ends up as Georgia Southern was down by 7 with about 7 minutes left in that ball game, but rallies back. And we've seen it a couple of times throughout the year where Georgia Southern will be up and give away the lead. But this was kind of the first time you've seen up, lead kind of dwindles, you're down by 7, and then Georgia Southern rallies back in the last couple of minutes.
The way that Mark Byington described it during the Ford locker room wrap-up, it was great to get this kind of win, and it was great to get it at this time of the year. I think those guys needed to prove to themselves that after some of the near misses, I mean, they had comeback wins before, but like you said, they were already down. They weren't up by a decent margin, then having to come back after losing that. They needed to get that. Number one, you sweep the road trip, which the Louisiana trip is extremely tough. Georgia Southern's only done it twice now. 3 straight wins in the Cajun Dome. The last Sun Belt team to do that was Middle Tennessee. And that was 8 years ago. So something that's extremely difficult to do. And standing-wise, because Georgia State lost at the Cajun Dome Thursday, and even though they won at ULM on Saturday, this keeps them tied for second place. They're both 9-5. So that turned out to be a very important rally for those guys, for the numbers. And it's just always fun to win on the road because we got another milkshake.
When you have a weekend of 2 milkshakes, that's a pretty good day.
That was our first 2 milkshake weekend of the year. That was our first road sweep of the year.
Well, how about it?
I couldn't imagine what would have happened at 3 games in 5 days if we would have had to go Coastal, App, Little Rock, 3 wins with 3 milkshakes. I'm just wondering if we would be able to get on the plane.
It's one of those, like, when we travel for football, they ask you what your weight is. You're like, I'm going to add a couple pounds just to make sure this is A-okay.
Let's see. We're going to Louisiana, so crawfish, A2F. We need to add about 5 or 10.
Georgia Southern women's basketball will look for their first road conference victory of the season as they head down to Louisiana's. And men's basketball will be at home against the Carolinas Coastal on Thursday, Saturday, against the Appalachian State Mountaineers for head coach Mark Byington and company. But a good event this past weekend. On Friday night, you had the unofficial start of Georgia Southern baseball as the Evening with the All-Stars over at the Naismith Lane Conference Center. You had a lot of good people in the same room, a lot of people in the same room, as a matter of fact. Had Frank Sulkowski as the MC, and you know it's always going to be a heck of an event when Frank Sulkowski starts it off with a joke about an athletic supporter. And Coach Rodney Hinton just kind of puts his head down and says, well, that's Frank.
That's just him being Frank. Well, people around here have been hearing it since 2006. If you've been in the state of Georgia, Frank's been around for a while. That's not
But you had 6 inductees to the Georgia Southern Baseball Wall of Fame, but you had John Tudor, along with Benji Moore, Matt Easterday, Dennis Dove, Chris Beck, Victor Roach, all going into the Wall of Fame, and deservedly so. And as Frank was reading throughout some of the accolades that each of them have, you go back and look, and those are six guys that really had an impact on this Georgia Southern program in a lot of different ways. Good to see guys like Chris Beck, who was here my first year in Statesboro, and just all around good guys.
I didn't get to see very many of them, unfortunately. I didn't get to see Victor Roach play because my first year at the Citadel doing baseball in 2012 was the year that Victor got hurt. I think it was six games into the season. I knew he had hit 30 home runs the year before, and I knew he was probably going to be a high-round draft pick anyway. But we had an early series. It was here in Statesboro that year. And I come down, and I see Victor standing in the outfield with a big wrist brace on. And I had not realized that he had gotten hurt. I talked with Ryan Chavers and Chris Draper about that. I said, yeah, sliding, made a, trying to make a catch real early in the season. And I was looking forward to him hitting five or six home runs that weekend off the Citadel. I did see Chris Beck pitch a couple of times. He just did things differently. You knew he was going to be at least a big leaguer for a little bit, and he turned out to carve out a nice little niche for a while. I watched him the one game in 2012 in Charleston, went eight innings, complete game on the road, and lost. I think it was 2-3-1. And I saw him pitch in the tournament that year up in Greenville against, I think it was Elon, the game that Georgia Southern just blew Elon out of the water, which, even though it was still with the Citadel, it's always nice to see a blowout of Elon.
Yeah.
But Benji Moore is one of the top infielders that's ever played here. Of course, John Tudor went on to great success in the big leagues. Dennis Dove, Rodney Hendon still says he has one of the best fastballs he's ever seen. He was an assistant coach here for a while. And also talked with skipper Matt Easterday, put together one of the best individual seasons in school history back in 2000, had the long hitting streak, infielder who made the switch to the outfield. And for someone, if you follow Georgia Southern baseball for a long time, you know that he's extremely deserving of that honor.
One thing, too, that head coach Rodney Hennon added to the program this year was he talked about it a little bit on Friday at the evening with the All-Stars about how when baseball season's over, players are heading to summer ball, all the students are gone, everybody's kind of in summer mode and not really worrying about athletics at that point for the 2 months that you get off until football rolls back around. But they don't really have an opportunity to have a banquet and kind of honor the guys from last year, and so they had a number of different awards that they gave out. You had Seth Schumann winning the Pitcher of the Year. He came back, was looking all dapper with his blazer and little white pocket square.
Well, he's a pro now.
Well,
him and Chase Cohen are pros now.
Of course.
And Joe Nahas, a pro. I saw Joe here a couple weeks ago at one of the scrimmages with his Cubs gear on. It's great to see those guys get a chance.
But you had Stephen Curry picking up the Jack Stallings Award. That doesn't necessarily mean he's the best player, but they do call him the GOAT. So, of course, he's going to be the Jack Stallings Award winner.
He would be the one.
Yeah, no doubt.
He would be the one.
But a great event. Good to see some old people around the Georgia Southern baseball program. Good to see some people as you start to get in the full groove of baseball. And Bobby Richardson, former New York Yankee, still the only player to be named the World Series MVP on a losing team.
That's right.
And they showed a couple of highlights of him hitting a grand slam in the World Series, was just one of two to do it at the time.
Did they show Bill Mazeroski's walk-off at 60? Or that probably wouldn't have been appropriate.
Yeah, no, probably not.
I'm just fun to...
No.
I mean, we talked about that before. I just like bringing that up.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, you got it back in 92, but it's fine.
But one thing is, Bobby Richardson was giving his speech, he asked Benji Moore to stand up because Benji had a telegram that Bobby Richardson had sent him when he was the head coach at South Carolina, and Bobby Richardson was trying to recruit Benji Moore. He had the telegram that Coach Richardson had sent him, and Bobby's like, stand up and read it. So he read it. It was your typical, hey, you've had a great season. We'd love to have you on campus. Hopefully we see you soon. So Benji gets finished reading it, and Bobby Richardson looks at him and goes, so what I do wrong? But a great speech by Bobby Richardson to go on talking about his time with Mickey Mantle, talking about when Mickey Mantle was in his last couple of days, was at the hospital with him in Dallas, flew back to South Carolina, and then Mantle had called him to come back because he wanted Bobby Richardson and his wife to be there whenever he passed, and he was. And so a great speech from somebody that has seen a lot and one of the more underrated players that you're going to see from the olden days of this is a guy that had 12 RBIs in a World Series, and most people probably don't know the name of Bobby Richardson.
When you think about great Yankees, a lot of it goes to Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, maybe for people now, Derek Jeter, who got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
But still the Yankees should have been unanimous, but whatever.
There has to be one. But don't forget the Yankees won 5 straight World Series from 49 through 53. So there was a second great era of Yankees baseball, post-Ruth, post-Gehrig. And even into the early 60s, they went back-to-back in 61 and 62, Roger Maris, of course, breaking the home run record. And Bobby Richardson's there for most of it. When you know someone that was a part of history and they start talking, you need to do one thing. Be quiet and let them talk. Sit there and learn, because you may not get another chance to do it.
The great event with Evening with the All-Stars as baseball season will kick off this weekend against the Ball State Cardinals. 4 games this weekend, 1 on Friday, 2 Saturday, and then the finale coming on Sunday. As last week had a little bit of tough news to take in Eagle Nation as Chester Webb passing away, one of the all-time greats in Georgia Southern men's basketball history. And wouldn't you know it, this week would have been his birthday.
Actually, tomorrow. Tomorrow would have been his birthday.
Wow. You think about a guy that did so much on the court for men's basketball, but we've talked to people, and we'll talk to Miss Helen Yates here in just a few moments, but just talking about how much of a good guy he was to have around campus. You're going to hear Miss Helen here in a few minutes talk about how everybody knew him around campus, and he was Mr. Basketball.
The basketball numbers are ridiculous, and they probably want to make you shake his hand. How good of a person he was makes you want to shake his hand again.
Joined now by Ms. Helen Jackie Yates, and we've talked a lot about different players over the past, but last week had the passing of Chester Webb, a great player for this program, but you and I have talked about it with Danny as well, about how much he meant to you personally. What was it that you'll remember most about Chester Webb?
The best thing about Chester was that he was a perfect gentleman. I met him my freshman year at Georgia Teachers College. He was a sophomore. I never heard Chester say an unkind word about anybody. I never heard him use a curse word. I never heard him raise his voice in anger. He was just a good old country boy, and we loved him dearly. I was here the night he scored 24 straight free throws. He was a leading scorer and was the most graceful player I think I've ever seen. Of course, on a personal side, Chester married my roommate. I often tease Carol and tell her I knew him before she did, but she got him. He was one of the most graceful players I think I have ever seen. He never seemed to make any effort in playing, and yet on campus he knew everybody, he spoke to everybody, but he epitomized basketball. He was Mr. Basketball, and I'm so happy that they retired his jersey and that it's hanging in Hannafield House. And you know, Chester came back to all the alumni meetings. He came back for homecoming every year and was even honored one year as the honorary captain for the football team. But he almost didn't play high school basketball. I don't know whether many people know that. He was a country boy, lived way out in the country, had 6 brothers and 2 sisters, and didn't have a way to get home after school. And the high school basketball coach was Roger Parsons, who had played here at Georgia Teachers for J.B. Scarce. And he recognized that Chester had a lot of potential, So he said, okay, son, if you'll play basketball for me, I'll drive you home every afternoon after school. And he did. And that's how we got Chester here at Georgia Teachers College.
You and I talk about Chester a lot, and it seems like every time we talk, you bring up the fact that he scored all of those points before there was a three-point arc, and just how amazing that is.
It was. I think Chester had several games where he scored 50 or more points, and I think there were quite a few where he had 40 or more points. Now, most of his points were hook shots, we called them then. You know, he would run down the floor and it'd be under the basket, so they wouldn't have been threes anyway. But he was, watching him play was like watching a deer run through the woods. You know, graceful, no rush, no sharp moves. He was just very graceful. And I don't think there'll ever be another Chester Webb. Now, he and Scotty Perkins were very much alike in the way they played, but I don't think there'll ever be another Chester. He'll always be Mr. Basketball at Georgia Southern.
Once again, that is Miss Helen Yates. We've heard her time and time again on Eagle Tales, but somebody that was relatively close with Chester Webb during her time here at Georgia Southern. She talks about her roommate ended up marrying Chester Webb, which is an overall great person to have associated with your program for Georgia Southern men's basketball.
There was a story that she told us when we went over for Eagle Tales last year, how Chester Webb nearly didn't play college basketball. From Elberton, he didn't really start playing until later on during his high school days anyway, but he had suffered a foot infection. He had stepped on a nail, and there was a worry that he was not even going to be able to play college basketball, but they were able to get that cleared up. On the advice of his high school coach, he ends up coming to Georgia Southern, spurning some other big-time offers, and he ends up being the school's all-time leading scorer and rebounder.
It's crazy to me. And you just heard it from Miss Helen, how there was so many things working against Chester Webb. She just talked about how it was the fact that he didn't have a ride home from school.
Yeah.
It's the fact that he played high school basketball. And then, as you mentioned, his high school coach kind of urging him on to come to Georgia Southern, and what a career he had here in Statesboro. Somebody else that had a great career here in Statesboro is our True Blue Eagle of the Week this week in J.I. Clements.
This week's True Blue Eagle of the Week, the namesake of J.I. Clements Stadium, former Georgia Southern baseball coach, assistant basketball coach, athletic business manager, athletic director here for Georgia Southern. He had his hand in a little bit of everything, was either a coach, a business manager, or athletic director from 1948 until his death in 1984.
The wild thing is that he did much of that at the exact same time. And, of course, he was the head coach of the 1962 NAI National Championship team, giving Georgia Southern its first ever national championship in any sport. He was the NAI National Coach of the Year in 1963. And let's not forget, as an administrator, he helped guide Georgia Southern from NAIA to Division II to Division I status in 1971, and that's what we get to enjoy now.
He was an assistant basketball coach from 48 to 62, and to be able to coach two different sports at the same time is something that's pretty incredible.
To me, that's the very essence of True Blue. It's not just being able to commit your time to one sport. It's being able to work with two different sports. And remember, at that point, a lot of those athletes were overlap athletes. Somebody like E.G. Maybaum, who we're going to talk about later on in this, played multiple sports, and that was just the norm during that time.
This week's True Blue Eagle of the Week, J.I. Clements, former assistant basketball coach, athletic business manager, athletic director, and most notably, head baseball coach here at Georgia Southern. J.I. Clements is this week's True Blue Eagle of the Week. Make sure to tune in every Monday for the next week's True Blue Eagle of the Week.
Once again, J.I. Clements is this week's True Blue Eagle of the Week. Again, those go out every Monday morning, and we will repeat them here on Inside Eagle Nation when this goes out, if you're listening to this on time on Tuesday. But getting set for a busy week for us. You will be here in Statesboro for it. I will be somewhere between here, Louisiana, and back here for Sunday, hopefully. But Georgia Southern women's basketball will get it started on Thursday. 7 o'clock, the tip-off against the ULM Warhawks down at Fant Huyen Coliseum. 64-47 was the victory for Georgia Southern women's basketball the first time around. Remember, back in early part of Sun Belt Conference play, this was a ULM and Louisiana stretch that Georgia Southern swept to start 2-0 in Sun Belt Conference play for the first time in school history. But the ULM Warhawks have struggled mightily this season, just 1-10 in Sun Belt Conference play so far, led by a couple of players in Lauren Fitch and Amber Thompson, both with 13 points a game, but have just struggled to get anything going as far as consistency. Have lost their last 7 games coming into this matchup with Georgia Southern. Then the Eagles will head down to the Cajun Dome on Saturday, 3 o'clock the tip-off between Georgia Southern and the Raging Cajuns. It was an 83-67 victory for Georgia Southern back at Hanner back on the 4th of January. 14 threes, the school record for Georgia Southern women's basketball, is what helped that cause against the Raging Cajuns. But this is a Raging Cajuns team that has really hit their pay dirt the last couple of weeks and are really starting to move up the Sun Belt Conference standings. Now sitting in 6th at 13-9 overall, 6-5 in Sun Belt Conference play.
Josh Brenner says hello, by the way.
I'll get to see old Josh when we go down there.
Yeah, he mentioned that about 17 times.
I'm so excited. When we get into women's basketball, it's not usually the same people that we're used to working with football, men's basketball, and baseball, because they're doing men's basketball. So I don't get to see a whole lot of our friends. We've got some people on the women's basketball side. Now Josh, who used to be with Louisiana baseball, is now with Louisiana women's basketball. You've got Steve Pelequin, one of the great, great people. He may be we call Jay Walker the dean of Sunbelt broadcasters. He may be the dean of Sunbelt women's broadcasters, Steve Pelequin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not even that's not even what you think hard about. That's an easy one.
Georgia Southern men's basketball will be at home against the Carolina Swing. This is a Carolina Swing that wasn't necessarily too fun of you the last time around.
It was a long trip because we had to go to Little Rock at the end of it. It started fine, and it was the new year. The calendar turned over to 2020, beat Coastal. It was on the way to being a blowout before Coastal scored, I think it was 17 in a row in the second half, and then you're fighting for it after they had tied the game. But Calvin Wishart made a free throw in the final couple of seconds. They couldn't get a shot off. Ended up winning 70-67. Coastal's different now. Keyshawn Bruden, who was leading the league in three-pointers made and still is, he left the team 2 weeks ago. Just entered the transfer portal. Right before their Arkansas State game, they had dropped 4 out of 5, so they go to Jonesboro, and they beat him without him. They split last weekend. They got blown out by Texas State. Texas State beat them 100-67.
Ooh.
Yeah, Texas State scored 100 points. But then they come back on Saturday, and then they whip UT Arlington by a final of 89-75. Couldn't let David Azor get going. I think he made 2 shots the entire game. Devontae Jones had 20 points. He's had to do even more with Bruton leaving the team. The fella that we got to focus on a little bit is Hosanna Katenge.
6'7". You got to focus on him to say his name correctly.
And that one took some... Yeah, that takes a bit.
That's some hooked on phonics for you.
6'7", 265. So he's got that Zion Williamson kind of build. He's much more grounded. He had 14 points, career high, against Arlington. Made all 6 of his shots. And the last shot that he made, I don't know how the basket is still standing, because he drove the lane. And once he starts to drive, you pretty much get out of his way. And he threw down a dunk that I feel bad for the rim. And I've said before that when Crawley dunks, he dunks really, really hard. But you got to think about somebody that's 50 pounds bigger with more force. Like, remember how Patrick Ewing used to dunk? Remember how hard he used to dunk? It reminded me of that kind of dunk.
So kind of like the dunk we saw down at the Cajun Dome a couple of years ago where it broke the rim and they had to bring the electrical tape.
Oh. Mm. It's one that gives you an extra heartbeat. You say, oh. You definitely jerk back because you don't want to get... You don't want to get the effects of it. You almost fall over your chair. He's one that you got to watch out for now because I think he's starting to figure out how to score. He's not just the big body. Jones is going to be their most important player. Tim Caesar, a freshman from Arkansas, has started to pick up a little bit. He's averaging about 4 points per game, but he's found his jump shot a little bit, and I think he's playing with some more confidence. They play a lot of guys, and they're going to try to junk it up with their zones. They'll score a lot of points, but they're also last in the league in scoring defense because they don't stop 3. And when Georgia Southern was up there the first time, they made 15 of them, 1-3. So it made a pretty big deal.
They will then welcome in the Appalachian State Mountaineers.
That's not really a role. I don't know what that was.
No, that's a black and gold. We need to get David Jackson down here for a game. Mr. Professor President. I mean, if we can...
Can you fit us in?
Yeah, I was about to say, if he can pencil us in for a little while.
Oh, that schedule's definitely in pencil.
Oh, yeah. Probably one of those multicolored pencils that you can erase. But Appalachian State will come in on Saturday, 4 o'clock, the tip-off inside Hanner Fieldhouse.
This is the part of the trip that stunk. This is the part that stunk.
Well started, this thing.
Up double digits in the second half, and then had trouble scoring. Apps a lot better on defense this year. I think they're second in the conference behind Texas State in scoring defense. You're not going to have a better scoring defense than Dana Casper. That's just kind of known. And then end of the game, Georgia Southern had trouble at the free throw line. That was when the free throw troubles really started. And Justin Forrest, with App down one, took a three for whatever reason. About a 25-footer. They nailed it. Less than a second left. Eagles actually had a chance. They threw a three-quarter court pass. Ike Smith caught it at the top of the key, turned and shot it. And, you know, I'm not behind the rim, so I can't tell how close it's going to be. How much he put on it, it looked okay, but it was a little bit left, and App ended up with a two-point win. So that's what stunk, because then we had to pack up quickly and get to Charlotte for a 10:30 flight that night to Little Rock to play Monday.
Yeah, it's really tough to pack up quickly when you got so many friends courtside with you at Appalachian State.
Yeah,
I didn't have as many as some people around the league
have. No, I didn't see the ones that some of the other people in the league have, and I don't know if that was just because, and like Georgia Southern, or maybe out of town that day, but some of our other friends have told us about these mysterious people that just lurk around the Holmes Convocation Center, but we're not going back there this year, so I'm not going to know.
Well, I had a sighting, and I was told that it was a Georgia Southern grad, but it was funny because Matt Stoll said that he was told that it was also an Arkansas State grad.
Is Bill Colhane told it was a Texas State grad?
I don't know. I hadn't got the update from Bill yet. Has anybody talked to him lately?
I'll see him not the week after this when we make that trip. I guess I'll have to bring it up.
Need to check on Bill. Make sure everything's okay.
I don't think Josh Sowers found out if she was a UTA grad either.
No. I think Josh had a sign set up for it that said here. But oh, I love the people that we get to do this with. But now it's time to switch gears for Georgia Southern baseball. A four-game series coming in this weekend to J.I. Clement Stadium, the newly lit J.I. Clement Stadium with the new LED lights. But four games against the Ball State Cardinals coming in. As Georgia Southern, you've got a lot of familiar faces around this baseball program. Pretty much everybody back outside of Tyler Martin in left field from the lineup a year ago. You've got Stephen Curry. It's hard to see Stephen Curry and put senior next to his name. But I still feel like he should be a sophomore.
I feel that way about him. I feel that way about Mason McWhorter because they both started from just about day one.
Yeah. But you got so many guys up and down this lineup, and watching the scrimmage on Sunday, this is a lineup that could be reckoned with.
It's a lineup that's experienced, and it's a lineup that's played together. So you're going to look around the field and see Stephen Curry, Mason McWhorter, Mitchell Golden's back after missing last year because of shoulder surgery. Blake Evans did a great job to fill in for him at third base. He's going to be there plenty. Oh, by the way, Austin Thompson's back for his third year to start at shortstop.
Which is very strange for me. When I was putting together the roster sheet that we have on the inside of our scorebook, I put Austin Thompson and Junior next to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute, that's not right. Yes. And I had to go check myself like three different times.
Jason Swan's back for his third year as a starter. Matt Anderson returns behind the plate, now a fifth-year senior. That's one that still blows my mind because his first year here was my first year here. I call him old man. I call Ike Smith old man. It's just, it's an endearing term just because you've been around it for so long. J.P. Teig is back behind the plate. Christian Avant is your utility guy. He's going to catch a little bit. He might play some infield. He's probably going to play more outfield than anything else. A guy you're going to get to know pretty well is Parker Beatier. Yes. Transfer out of Santa Fe Community College. He's going to be the starter in center field. He can go get him. I'm not going to call him Logan Baldwin yet because I don't want to give that without seeing some things, but practice has looked really good. He's got a terrific arm. The one guy you're not going to see a lot from early on is Noah Ledford, the slugger out of Buford. He's going to miss about the first month of the season because of a broken foot, but it's an opportunity for guys like Chandler Davis to step in, Cody Shook to step in. He redshirted last year, but he has been tearing the cover off the ball ever since they came back for fall. So I think we know what's going to happen on offense. Pitching is a little bit more up in the air. There are guys that have been here, but they're going to have to serve in different roles in 2020.
Real quick before we switch over to pitching, one thing that you and I have been talking about the last couple of months, even before fall ball started.
Did the fishing net come in finally?
No.
Okay, it's not that? Okay.
Not yet. But you mentioned Parker Beatier can go get it, et cetera. I've seen Parker Beatier for the last couple of years. He was a part of the Sunbelt Summer Baseball League up in Atlanta. I covered him when he was with the Gwinnett Tides.
Right.
I was with the Gwinnett Tides. And so being able to see him and see his name pop up on Georgia Southern's roster, that's something that I've been fired up about. Not just because he's a great dude, but he can hit a little bit, but he is one of the best center fielders. He is probably, outside of Logan Baldwin, the best center fielder I have ever seen live.
And that's what he needs to be. He yes. needs to be a center fielder. He doesn't need to come in and hit 400. Granted, if he did, bonus. If he plays center field, catches what's hit to him, show off the arm, know where he's needed to be position-wise, then that'd be all right.
He's a guy with good speed, good baseball IQ, who is almost perfect for that 9 spot in the batting order, and a lot like Joe Maddon used to do a lot, having a second leadoff guy at the bottom of the lineup. That is about perfect for him.
You remember how good Blake Evans was in that role once he got to start, and then back half of the year when he was having those 8-9 pitch at-bats, he was walking, he was getting on base. You'll see Evans not necessarily bat ninth a lot this year, but somebody that would still probably be at the bottom of the order and maybe even eventually somebody that could lead off, but that's going to be Stephen Curry's spot for one final year. I do like what's back, but I like where you're going to be able to put him. And if this offense can succeed without Ledford, think about what it's going to be when he comes back right around the start of conference play.
You mentioned a little bit of question marks on the pitching side, not necessarily what they're going to do. It's just who's going to do it.
Yeah.
You've got different guys like Jordan Jackson coming in, the transfer in from Spartanburg Methodist, and different guys that have played roles for this Georgia Southern team but are going to have to step up. You look like a Tyler Owens type guy who has been kind of the midweek juggernaut for a lot of the season last year for Georgia Southern baseball, flipping that change up in there every once in a while. But when you look at what this pitching staff has, you see a lot of talent. You just aren't exactly sure as of right now where Rodney Hinnon and B.J. Green are going to, okay, you go here, where they're going to fill in the blanks.
Oh, there could be a lot of musical chairs those first couple of weeks of the season. And there's a lot of games, so you'll have a lot of opportunity. In the first weekend, it's different with a 4-game series, so you need 4 defined starters. Opening night can kind of take care of itself, and I would expect Jordan Jackson probably gets the ball for game 1 against Ball State. He looks the part. He has presence. I saw him pitch a couple of times during the fall, 4-pitch guy. He's not afraid to go after dudes. He will bust guys inside. And I think for a number one pitcher, really for anybody, but specifically for a number one, when you're trying to be a tone setter, if you can't match intensity by working that inside corner, you're going to miss over the plate too much. You're going to serve up some beach balls, and you're going to give up extra base hits. He's not afraid to go inside to saw people off if they were using wooden bats, to use that kind of term. But somebody that can get a lot of ground balls, and I think he's going to rack up some strikeouts with that slider-curveball combo.
You look in the back half of the bullpen, you've got a lot of different guys that can take pretty meaningful roles in the bullpen for head coach Rodney Hinnon. You look like a guy at Hayden Harris, somebody that is probably, if you had to name a closer right now, he's probably the closer for Georgia Southern baseball, but you've got a little bit of competition with him. Guys like Jonathan Edwards, Nick Jones might even be in the back part of the bullpen.
That's a bad man.
And then somebody like Jacob Parker can take the step up as well.
Harris was kind of the closer last year. Granted, Georgia Southern didn't have a specific closer. Sometimes it was Cole Whitney, sometimes it was Hayden, and the benefit was that Whitney was a right-hander, Harris was a lefty. I still haven't seen very many guys Harris's size that can make the ball move like he does. That fastball is anywhere from 88 to 91, but the movement that he generates misses so many sweet spots, and that's why he had the great sophomore season like he did. I think he could do just about anything, but back half is, I think, where he could be the most valuable. I think Jacob Parker could have a really big year. We know he's got the velocity. It's always been command, but I think if he pitches more, he'll be able to work through that, and I think he could be a valuable part of the back end. Jonathan Edwards is somebody that's ready to make a jump in the ilk of a Harris. His fastball moves a ton. All of his pitches move a ton. and he's 6 feet six. They call him Big John for a reason. If he can get on top of everything, I think he can be a ground ball guy. I think he can also be a pretty high strikeout guy like Jordan Jackson and then Nick Jones. Him in the last half of the year, he just emerged. He burst onto the scene. 6 feet six that gets so far out in front where it seems like you're basically hitting the ball out of his hand because he extends so far to the plate. Think about what he did in the tournament. He pitched two of those games, important against the Raging Cajuns in that first game, but if he doesn't dominate Troy those last three innings, maybe Georgia Southern's not playing for another championship. He threw three shutout, got the final out when Drew Frederick bounced out to him, and still maybe my favorite strikeout in 4 years was when he struck out Dalton Sinkfield in the seventh inning with the bases loaded on three straight fastballs. I know we've seen a lot of ball, a lot of strikeouts, but that one is right at the top of the list.
The best part of that story is he threw the first two fastballs and Sinkfield didn't have a chance.
Oh, we were talking because you were on the field and I'm like, he's just go right to it.
And I'm in your ear. I'm saying, fastball.
Well, he had done the same thing. I think it was 3 weeks earlier when Georgia Southern was at Troy. They faced each other and Jones made quick work of him and it was on the fastball. It was 89. It was 90. I couldn't see you, but I hear you talking. Like, this has to be a fastball because he's not touching this. The last one pumps it in there at 91, flails through it. Bones is fired up. Whole dugout's fired up, and then two innings later, we're going to a championship.
In the words of B.J. Green, Bones is ready, baby.
I think the whole team's ready. I'm ready.
Yeah.
You're ready.
Before we dive into this season, something that we probably should have said last year, if there's ever a point where you just randomly start laughing while you're calling the game, it's probably because I've said something stupid into my mic that just goes into your ears. Everybody else can't hear.
I'll resemble that remark.
Getting set for Georgia Southern baseball, 6:30, the first pitch on Friday night. Danny will have that one for you on the network. Then Frank Sulkowski will have internet-only coverage for you on Saturday with a doubleheader scheduled for 12 noon and 6 o'clock. And then on Sunday, to wrap up the series, 12 noon, the first pitch on Sunday. Danny will be back with the on-deck circle at 11:30. I will be somewhere between Savannah and Statesboro. I'll get to J.I. Clements at some point, so somebody needs to save me a parking spot so I can just kind of roll in, and then we will get it done on Sunday.
Real quickly on Ball State, it is a four-game series, and they're good.
Yeah.
They're a good team. They won 38 games last year. They were 20-1 at home, so this is probably a good thing that this is being played at J.I. Clements Stadium. That home record was the best in the country. They've got their top six position players back from last year. Their catcher is the MAC Defensive Player of the Year in Chase Seve. They've got Ross Messina, who was second in the MAC with 22 doubles a year ago. A couple of transfers that could really slug at first base, but their pitching is where they make their hay. Last 3 years, they've set school records for strikeouts. They did lose their best arm. Dre Jameson was a first-round pick by the Diamondbacks last year. He set the conference record for single-season strikeouts, but John Baker's probably going to be the Friday guy. Tall right-hander, third year in the rotation. He's already second in school history in strikeouts. He went 7-2 last year. Kyle Nicholas is somebody that grabs the headlines, though. He's probably their best pro prospect because he lights up radar guns. He's going to be 94, 96. Command can be an issue. He's walked almost a guy an inning over the first 2 years of his career. And then Chase McDermott, who's probably going to see one of the starts during that four-game series. Right-hander who's over the top. He had some injury concerns during 2019, but the more and more I read about this team, they're good. This is not a season-opening series where Georgia Southern is going to walk onto the field, take two or three, and say, oh, okay, let's move on to Georgia Tech next Tuesday. If the Eagles aren't ready to roll, Ball State is going to roll them. I'm telling you, that's how good this Ball State team is.
It'll be an exciting weekend for J.I. Clements Stadium. Again, four games against the Ball State Cardinals coming in out of the MAC to start off the 2020 campaign. Women's basketball on the road against the Louisiana schools. Men's basketball here on Thursday and Saturday against Coastal and App, respectively, at Hanner Fieldhouse. That'll wrap up this edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Thank you, as always, for listening and tuning into this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.